Hello, lacrosse friends. Welcome once again to Box the Beat on NLL Radio, also available on iTunes via Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I'm Stephen Stamp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com. This week on the show, I am joined by Brian Shanahan, the longtime color commentator for the National Lacrosse League. He was in the chair to call color for Game 1 of the NLL Finals. Shanny and I talk about Game 1, about what to expect moving forward. We really break down this NLL Cup Championship Series between the Buffalo Bandits and Calgary Roughnecks, which Calgary leads 1-0 heading home for Game 2 with a chance to win their first title in a decade. Enjoy the show. Thanks for being with me, lacrosse friends, here on Box the Beat. Joining me on Box the Beat, a man with a front row seat for Game 1 of the NLL Finals, Brian Shanahan. Shanny, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Stamper. It's good to be back.
It's always fun chatting about NLL, and you had a great seat sitting beside Brendan Glasheen calling the game in Buffalo on the weekend. And I was there as well in Buffalo, so I didn't actually watch the game. I haven't watched the whole thing afterwards, so I don't know exactly what you thought of it because I didn't get to hear what you said. So a brief synopsis, what you think of the game as a whole.
Well, obviously the first half was definitely a defensive battle. And, I thought Buffalo outchanced Calgary, especially in the first half. But I thought the Buffalo's shooting wasn't so good. I thought they missed the net quite a bit. And sometimes, I think I mentioned this on air, sometimes I think when the goalies are playing so well, shooters start trying to get too fine with their shots. Mm-hmm. And, trying to thread the needle, pick that small corner instead of just getting shots on net. And I think Buffalo was maybe guilty of that. But then, in the second half, obviously a run by Calgary, but, the turning point was definitely the foot of the crease. Who was that by Buffalo?
Ethan O'Connor,
the foot and crease call, which I think was the right call, but the fact that Calgary went down the floor and scored, turned that into a 3-goal game instead of what Buffalo was hoping would be a 1-goal game, after that goal. And it was so close, when you watch the replay. I could see people arguing either way, and if that's the case, then you have to stick with the original call.
I was sitting beside Brian Lemon, the NLL's vice president officiating of operations. He deals with the officials and everything during the game. And we're watching that. And we're looking at each other like, do you see green between his toe and the crease? And I was like, I don't know. It could be some green. It could be a shadow from the shoe because it's a white shoe on the white turf, on the white paint. But depending on the angle, the shoe casts a little bit of a shadow, or there's just a bit of a line at the edge of the shoe anyway.
Oh, you're right. I was seeing shadow. And the reason why I kind of leaned the way that he was in the crease was because, normally you're looking for that green in between. And there was, mm-hmm. It wasn't clear there, but you could see a discoloration that I think was shadow because what I looked at was the white line of the crease.
Yeah.
And if you follow the outer white line of the crease, it appeared to curve in just slightly where his shoe was.
Yeah, it seemed disrupted a bit, right?
Exactly. But either way, it was so close that you had to stick with the original call. Like if he had called it a goal, I would have agreed with him, keeping that call as well. And I'm glad the referee, it was LeBronch, I think, right? Who said it was.
It was Chris Williams was the crew chief.
Was it Williams that did it?
Todd LeBranch, I think, made the original call.
Yeah. And he said that it wasn't clear. Like I like when the referees come out and they'll say that, the evidence wasn't clear, so original call stays.
Yeah, I thought the one interesting thing looking at it, like I said, you could see it was so close, and I tweeted at the time, and I don't really tweet a lot during games, so I like to focus on the game, but I did tweet, that's a tough call, and I think you have to go, I think they got it right, you have to go with the original call. It looked to me like he was in the crease, And I had like one or two people reply saying, yeah, I think you got it right. There was no, I didn't see any controversy. Maybe there were some other places. I didn't see anyone other than the, you know, 15,000 Buffalo fans in the building who were booing pretty heartily. I didn't see anyone else disagree with it, which is really reinforces that they got it right.
Well, I was next to Randy Mearns. You know, Randy Mearns and John Gertler do radio in the booth right beside us, and he disagreed with it. He thought it was good, but he he wasn't up in arms about it. He just said, "Yeah, no, I think it was a good goal." And I'm not saying it wasn't. I like what you and I are both saying is we think it was the right call. You had to stick with, you know, it wasn't the fun.
The interesting thing on that whole play is because I saw Graham Parra did tweet, "Oh, you know, a goal scored while the challenge flag is on the floor." I don't know if I've seen that before. I have seen it a couple of times where the flag is thrown and then the play continues. But I don't know if you noticed because I was looking actually as the play went on. I was watching back and forth to the Buffalo bench to see if they're going to throw the flag. And as soon as Dane Doby put the ball in, Rich Kilgore threw the flag. I think it's Kilgore, not John Tavares, that has it. Their coach threw the flag as, like, by the time the ball landed on the floor after Doby scored, that flag was flying out for the challenge because you have to challenge it.
No, exactly. At that point, you have to. And it's funny, too, because, you know, calling the game, like, right away, I said, you know, we're probably going to see a flag here because it hadn't been a flag thrown up to that point. So it's not like they had wasted any flags or anything. So, I'm looking at the bench and all of a sudden they score. And I thought the same thing as you. Like it's got to be 100% now. They got to do that. But it, you know, close enough at that point that, you know, I was thinking even if they didn't score, there was a good chance they were going to throw that flag. But, yeah, that definitely tipped the decision.
And the thing about it, too, is you look at that goal, and, I mean, it was a 5-3 game. Obviously, if O'Connor's goal is good, it's 5-4. When it's not, Doby's goal is good, so it's 6-3, and that's a huge difference. And, I mean, we always look at things in retrospect and say, oh, Calgary's won 10-7, so they're going home. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my goodness, you know, Calgary really kind of won that. And it's a 3-goal spread. But you've got the empty net goal, so it's basically a 9-7 game before that.
Sorry, go on.
That's okay. I just listened to the music for a sec. yeah. But if the O'Connor goal counts, the Doby one doesn't, and everything else plays out the same, you've got yourself an 8-8 game. Not much difference between these two teams.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's why, without a doubt, that was the turning point in the game. And I might add that I think Buffalo, they got a little bit rattled. And I haven't seen them get rattled in a long time this year. I know early in the season they had a few games that they weren't so good. But, and I guess maybe you could say against Georgia, you know, the last time they met, or when Georgia beat them. But for the most part, they've been a pretty calm team, and they look like they got a little bit rattled, you know, in that fourth quarter of that game.
Yeah, and somebody mentioned it in one of the articles. One of the local beat reporters did it either in a video or a written story, saying, you know, Buffalo's not used to losing this year. It's not something that's happened very often to them. You know, they lost their second game of the year to Toronto. That's in December. And then, you know, they lose, well, they lost a game to Rochester in January.
Toronto early in the year, and then it was Georgia late in the year. Yeah.
And other than that, they just didn't lose a heck of a whole lot. And they really were winning games relatively handily as well for a lot of those games. I mean, again, the Toronto loss late as well. That was the overtime game. But it just isn't something where they've trailed very much in the whole season. And it was strange to see them get rattled. And the big key is that as much as that was the turning point with that non-goal and goal, the real turning point, what it led to was that little run of a few goals with when Jesse King scored afterwards. And then you have Dan Taylor add one all in a 2.5 minute stretch.
And
that's,
you know,
the difference.
No, and you know, I don't necessarily buy it. Some people say, you know, teams have to face adversity to win. And a few people were sort of giving me that on the weekend. And I don't necessarily agree with it because you could probably look back in the last 4 years and say, well, you know, Saskatchewan's the best team in the league from start to finish, and they still won. Yeah. you know, a number of times, save for the year that Georgia won. So I don't necessarily buy that that argument, but, you know, I heard that thrown around a little bit. And I think it, a lot of people are throwing that around after Tampa Bay got knocked out after the, you know, in the NHL after having an incredible season. But, you know, I don't really think that's it. But I do think Calgary seemed to get every bounce in that fourth quarter for a little while. Like you mentioned, yeah, the Dan Taylor goal, that was a shot that went off somebody's body and up in the air. And he just, you know, while all the Buffalo players are looking around for it, lands in his stick and he's wide open. Yeah. And I think at one point I was, you know, I know point streak doesn't give you the shots on net by quarter. They just give you the accumulative shots on net. But I was tracking the shots on net by quarter. And if I'm not mistaken, Calgary scored four goals in their first five shots in that fourth quarter. And they were all, I'm not blaming Vince at all. They were all, when you think back, they were all like wide open guys, you know,
yeah,
opportunities. But it just sort of showed, you know, how the game was going. You know, Buffalo would get their chances and Calgary would get a wide open play. I mean, you know, both of Dobie's goals, you know, Dobie's goals in the fourth quarter plus, you know, King's goal. King was wide open. Taylor was wide open. So they were all very, you know, glorious scoring chances.
Yeah, and it, actually, I mean, if you go to the goalie stat line in the box score on point streak, it does show saves by quarter.
So oh, yeah, yeah.
Figure it out, right? And Matt Vince made five saves in the fourth quarter and gave up four goals.
Oh, there you go.
And then they had the empty netter. So
I probably was right. Like at that, yeah, you know, because I was, like I said, I was tracking them each quarter. When I quickly looked at it, I just said, I can't be his fifth shot. Like, and, you know, but, you know, I think, yeah, that would lead me to believe it probably was right. And like I said, I'm not saying that I meant that he was playing poorly. It just meant that they got quality scoring chances.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Taylor one is a great example that you pointed out where, you know, he passes the ball to Riley Lowe and he takes the shot. It hits, whether it was a defender or Vince, pops straight up in the air. And the classic situation of Taylor following the shot is looking straight at it. All the defenders have to turn and orient themselves and find it. And there's no way. There's no way they could find it and get to him before he got the ball. Now, you could argue somebody should have covered him and not let him just cut to the net, which is a fairly valid argument. But nobody was going to get – was going to see the ball before he did.
No, exactly. And those goals – so Corey Small had made it 6-4 mm-hmm. on the power play goal. But then the next three goals by Calgary were scored within, you know, a little bit less than 2.5 minutes, you know, yeah. Dobie, King, and Taylor.
Yeah. Yeah, real turning point. So that makes me think, as we go into game two, what are we looking at? What do we expect? I kind of figured going into it, I thought Buffalo would win at home, then Calgary would win at home, and then it could be quite a toss-up for the third game, and I probably lean towards Buffalo taking it at home in the third game. And I think they still have, you know, they still have an excellent chance to win the next two games and take this championship. And I know Calgary knows that they're not home and cooled out, but it's a really good position for Calgary going home with a chance to clinch.
Well, the other thing is, if you look at, you know, home and away records, mm-hmm. Only three teams had winning records on the road this year. And it was Buffalo, Georgia, and Calgary.
Yeah.
And Calgary and Buffalo both had the same records at home as they did on the road. So Calgary could win on the road, and it should be even less if Buffalo could go win on the road. Because even, you know, Calgary had a mediocre record at home. Like Calgary's 5-4 at home, 5-4 on the road. I mean, that is a very impressive road record, not so impressive at home. So
yeah, and Buffalo being
7-2
at home and 7-2 on the road. Yeah, it'd be no surprise if Buffalo goes and wins it, especially given how close it really was. And one other factor now, I thought, like you said, Matt Vince played very well in game one, but he rarely has back-to-back games where he gets beat. It just hasn't happened much for many years.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, the other thing is, I think Del Bianco played great. And
yes.
I think, you know, going forward is you got to get to him early. Because when they had when they had that lead, you know, late in the game, I know Buffalo made it closer, but he seemed to get in such a comfort zone. Del Bianco did.
He did.
And this is where you kind of think, oh, now he's not giving them anything easy, you know. And for the most part, I thought he had Dane Smith's number. I know Smith scored one goal on an outside shot, but I thought for the most part, every time Dane Smith wound up for a shot, Del Bianco seemed to know he had no one to pass it to and was almost on the top of the crease. So like every time, by the time Smith took those shots, Del Bianco gave him no angle at all. He just seemed very confident in that. And sometimes, you know, that's a confidence in knowing that your defense is doing their job, because, you know, one backdoor goal or one guy behind the net, that, you know, the goalie starts second guessing about coming out, and he was coming out with all the confidence in the world.
And yeah, like you said, I mean, the defense was so good to the point. I actually thought Del Bianco was probably better against Colorado, giving up the four. I thought he was challenged more, actually, against Colorado. They seemed to have not a ton of shots, but some really high quality chances that he just stoned them on. And then they got a bit into the, you know, trying to be too precise, trying to be too perfect, knowing how hard it was to beat him. But I was just blown away by how he controlled the ball, controlled rebounds on the in the Colorado game, and again did a great job of it. But the defense has just gotten better and better. And I talked to Kurt Malowski about this when I had him on the show last week, about how, you know, they've had really good pieces. They've had on paper what has looked like really good defenses over the years, and yet they haven't actually finished. They've finished fairly low in the rankings of goals against. They've given up a lot of goals over the last 6 years. It's been that long since they were really competitive in the goals against with the top teams in the league. And this year, just a few little changes. I think Dan McRae had maybe his best season, and he's been very good for a long time. But I also think the addition of Eli Salama and Reese Callies and Shane Simpson, who has played defense almost exclusively. I know he was forward, playing forward in game one because they were missing Tyler Pace. But I think those guys have really added a lot and just gelled with the rest of the players. And they've come together as the best, maybe the best defensive unit since Kurt Malewski's been there.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because, like you said, it over the years, they've almost been similar to what Buffalo has been most of the years until now, where they seem to be stronger on offense than on defense.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, this year where it's interesting how both teams have really improved so much defensively. I know Buffalo's the, you know, best in the league, best in just about every court category.
Yeah.
But yeah, Calgary's goals against was tremendous this year as well. And I like, you know, I spoke to you know, Kurt Malowski before the game, and he said, you know, we were asking him why the inconsistency. You know, we know there's some obvious reasons for inconsistencies at the beginning of the year. You know, particularly they didn't have, you know, Dixon and Westberg. But he also said part of it was that they were committed with going with those rookies. And, you know, the three guys you mentioned, that there's growing pains for those guys. But, he believes, and I do too, that the commitment paid off because, you know, they're just going to improve. I mean, you know, talented young rookies are just going to improve the more time they go. But there are going to be some growing pains. And that was, you know, another reason why the beginning of the year, I mean, they didn't come storming out of the gate. In fact, you know, doing my power rankings all year, I think I used the word inconsistent more about them than I ever have, because, you know, it was hard to get a read on them. You know, saying, man, these guys are playing great, and then they would throw up a stinker, you know, and maybe even a couple of stinkers, and then and suddenly, you know, they're playing great again. But you know, what a time to be playing great right now. I guess that's six wins in a row when you count the end of the regular season plus playoffs. But they're also looking like so confident. But yeah, you talk about their goals against. They were third best in the league, only behind Buffalo and Colorado.
Yeah, for the numbers for anyone, because I've got them up, and people probably don't while they're listening. Buffalo gave up 186 goals, Colorado 193, and then Calgary 201. And 200 is really a benchmark. If you give up 200 goals or fewer, that's really, really good. Colorado did it for the third time in a row. They're the only team to have done it all of the last 3 years. And last year, they were the only team to have done it 2 years in a row. It just doesn't, it's not easy to give up fewer than 200 goals. So to be at the 201 mark is very good, especially, like you said, they were very inconsistent early in the season. And Christian Del Bianco, he talked about because I had him on the show, and he said, he had a few games where he struggled early in the year after having such a great year last year for most of the season. He actually had a few games down the stretch last year where teams kind of figured him out. So it was kind of the pendulum swinging where people had figured out a bit of how to beat him, and then he was reacting. And he is such a lacrosse rat. He is such a lover and a student of the game that he goes and he works and works and works. He'll take shots, he'll watch video, and he is so smart about adjusting that I think he's just got himself back in the swing. And it's going to be tough to get him off that, and it may not happen quickly.
Well, did you go to the press conference after the game?
I did.
Dane Smith? No. I got this secondhand from Ashley, but maybe you can correct me if I'm changing it a bit in translation. But apparently Dane Smith said after his goal, when he scored on Del Bianco, he was hoping that he might have rattled Del Bianco a little bit. And Del Bianco instead smiled at him and said, "Great shot." and he didn't feel he was being cocky or anything. He thought it was a sincere. Del Bianco was giving Smith a sincere compliment, like "great shot, great goal," and it kind of rattled Dane a little bit, thinking, "You're this kid that I'm hoping to rattle is, you know, complimenting me on a goal. He's that secure, you know, like and I could see that, you know, and I mentioned on air in our game that NLL fans, you know, many NLL fans. Just see Del Bianco as a young, great goalie, you know, who's under the spotlight for the first time. But, you know, you and I and all the Canadian fans know what he's done in the Minto Cup. Yeah. And, you know, and I think that's a kid who has already proven that he thrives under pressure. So I think this is just another example of it. You know, what was he, MVP in two Minto Cups and, you know, three Minto Cups in a row and MVP in two of them, winner in two of them.
Yeah, and I remember calling the Minto Cup when Coquitlam was at Six Nations. He played for Coquitlam, of course, hometown. And they're in Six Nations playing the Arrows in 2015 or 2016. He was like 18 years old and playing. And this, I mean, that was a good Coquitlam team. They had Mike Messenger and Challen Rogers. I mean, they had a good Jordan Magnuson, Taylor Stewart. It was a great defensive unit, but he was an absolute star, and he was going up against an amazing Six Nations team led by, you know, Austin Stotch and Brendan Bomberry, and I mean it was a star-studded series, and Doug Jamieson was the goalie at the other end. So I mean it was two of the great young goalies in the game. But the big thing about it is Doug Jamieson was fantastic in that series, and I think this year he had a very good season, but he went through kind of the typical young goalie ups and downs, a lot of downs to start with in his NLL career, and he just kept plugging away, kept working at it. I think he's really established that he is making his mark, but he still, you know, feels he's got a ways to go, whereas Del Bianco, I know he didn't play right away coming into the league as an 18-year-old, but once he got a chance to play, he didn't seem to have too many hiccups on the way. I know his first game that he started, he was terrible. Well, he wasn't even terrible. They were picking corners. He got lit up when 2 years ago, right, when Frank Chiliano started, and or it was the starter, but was suspended for the first game. And Del Bianco gave up like six goals on eight shots or something, and Zach Higgins went in and it was fantastic. But other than that, he hasn't had a whole lot of – he hasn't blinked much.
No, and you're right. He didn't play at all his first couple of years. And I don't think last year the plan was for him to be the starter. I think that that's sort of evolved with, Chiliano out, and then Chiliano didn't get off to a great start when he started playing. And, Del Bianco hasn't looked back. I mean, he is, a legitimate superstar now. I think I'd put him in the top three goalies in the league right now, or definitely in the top five, but maybe top three.
So an interesting what if. You mentioned, like, I agree with you, the plan was to have Frank Chiliano start last season, as they did, and I don't think they planned to have Del Bianco take over that role necessarily last year, but that's the way it worked out. So if Del Bianco hadn't ever become the starter, if Chiliano played great all year, Del Bianco stayed as his backup, and then you go to the expansion draft, then what do you do?
I think you still protect Del Bianco. I think even then, everybody knew he was the next one.
Yeah, I agree. I just think it's just a lot easier when he came in and did what he did and was unquestionably the best goalie in the league for about an 8-week stretch.
Nobody's second-guessing that decision then. Yeah.
Yeah. Another point that I want to bring up and talk about is it is a world championship year. The Worlds will be in Langley, British Columbia in September, the 19th to the 28th at the Langley Events Center, the main rink, and they have a practice facility. Plus, it'll be another, I think it's Aldergrove, is the third rink to fit all the teams in. And Team Canada will take, almost assuredly take three goalies. Generally, it's a 23-man roster. They'll take three goalies, and then usually they tend to go 8 forwards and 10 defenders or 7 and 11, usually 8 and 10 with some guys who can go both ways, which in 2015, that included Dane Smith and Jordan McIntosh, who could play both ends of the floor. But if you're, and I'm going to have a column about this, about who I think the leading contenders are coming out soon. So I don't want to talk about everything, but I want to talk about the goalies, because what a difficult decision it can be picking the goalies for Canada. In 2015, it was Matt Vince, Aaron Bold, and who's the third goalie?
I don't remember. It wasn't Poulin, was it?
No, because Poulin played for Czech Republic.
Oh, that's right. He plays for Czech Republic.
And Nick Rose played for England. It wasn't Dylan Ward, I don't think. Oh, it was Brandon Miller.
Oh, that's right. That's
was the third goalie. So this year, to me, the first name that has to be on that list, whether he's a starter or the backup or even the third goalie, I think the first name on the list is Christian Del Bianco, because he's the future for that team.
Well, I mean, I've thought of this for the last few minutes because you sort of gave me a warning on this question, but
yeah,
I'd say the top three guys has got to be Vince, Ward, and Del Bianco.
Yeah.
The only thing is that sort of throws a kink into this is sometimes you might have to decide what makes sense. It's better to pick a guy who's happy to be a backup. Now, if all three of these guys say, yeah, I'm happy to go, and if I am the backup, I'm the backup. But, you know, it's not always that simple, right? So sometimes you might pick the guy who is, you know, this is our starter, and – sorry, my dog was just grabbing something. I'm trying to get it out of his mouth.
No problem.
Yeah.
Sometimes dogs insert themselves into podcasts.
I know. I guess it's distracted there. So I'd say if we're just going to say the top three guys this year, I think it's those three without a doubt. But the only thing that throws the kink in it is whether you decide, somebody would not be happy saying being the backup, or, you know, all three of them want to be the starter and nobody wants to be the backup. So that's where you might, you know, go with the younger guys, the third guy.
Yeah.
You know,
I think
two established guys to fight it out and a younger guy's the third. I'm sure Del Bianco would go for any role. Like, he's so young, he'd say, I'll go as the third guy if that's what you think I am. And if I get my chance, I'll prove it, you know. So
exactly. The thing is, he's 21 years old. He'll turn 22 this summer, this year. So I don't think he'd have a problem with it. He has a ton of respect for Matt Vince and Dylan Ward and other goalies. And it's like half an hour from home for him. It's pretty simple for him to just drive to the arena, and whether he plays or not, it's not a big deal. Now, here is the interesting point. As I mentioned, Poulin played for Czech Republic. Rose played for England. Both are in contention here for Canada, and neither is committed. Both have actually said, I know Nick Rose, the England coach, Walt Christensen, had talked to him about, hey, you know, I need to figure things out. I got to move forward. And I actually did a story on IL Indoor recently about England and their movement towards an all-English
team. I did read that, yeah.
Right? So the thing is, Nick Rose said, Walt Christensen said, hey, Nick, I'd really love to have you, but, you know, what's your situation? And Nick said, look, I want to be on Team Canada. If you have to move ahead, go ahead. That's it. I mean, Rosie's a, you know, like, all these goalies are such great guys. And Rosie said, hey, you do what you have to do. And Walt Christensen has confirmed Frank Chiliano as the England goaltender. So Poulin and Rose are in the mix. Here is, to me, the wrench in the system is Matt Vince is a school teacher. He is playing for the Peterborough Lakers, and Evan Kirk is not playing this summer for the Lakers. So right now it's Vince and Doug Buchan are the goalies. Vince is clearly your guy in the playoffs as the veteran and the star. So if they go to the Man Cup and they've won the last two, so they'll be at least strong contenders for the Man Cup. He's got to take a week and a half, 2 weeks off, or at least some time off school to go to the Man Cup. Can he then take a couple of weeks off to go to the World Championships right after? Also, he and his wife are having a baby in late September, I believe it is, sometime in September. So I'm not even sure if Matt Vince has applied for Team Canada. I think he may have just taken himself out and said, I just can't do it this year. I'm not 100% sure on that. I'm not going to ask him during the NLL finals if anything about Team Canada. So that to me would make it really interesting, because then Del Bianco for sure is going to be there, and Dylan Ward, I would think, has to be there. But I mean, Mike Poulin had a great year for Georgia, terrible last game, he would tell you himself, I'm sure. But that doesn't negate the great year he had if he's healthy. Nick Rose, very good year again for Toronto, a few ups and downs. I know Rock fans for some reason don't seem to like Rose, don't seem to think he's a very good goalie, or a lot of them. He is a very good goalie. He's a legitimately top goalie. A dark horse, maybe Evan Kirk, although he was injured late in the year, didn't have a great season, and isn't playing this summer. So I think that kind of takes him out of the mix. There's a lot there to unpack.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Vince doesn't go, because, and this is why I was talking, at the beginning I was saying, the three guys that I think are the best aren't necessarily the three guys that will go. And you mentioned, the fact that he's a teacher, the fact that, they're expecting, and with his age, he's been there, done that. So, it might be different if it was a first, the chance of a lifetime for, first time, but I could see him passing on it. That's the time it's in September, and I believe it's about 10 days. That's a lot of work to miss. And with everything else going on. So I would be really surprised if Vince went to that, and especially when you add in the fact that he, he could be going to the Man Cup. So I think that makes room for other guys.
Yeah, and the one thing with the Man Cup and the Worlds are a little different, because with the Man Cup, if Peterborough gets through, and they have won the last two, as I said, they're going to be very strong contenders, and they won't have Evan Kirk this year. So it's him and Doug Buchan, so he'd be the go-to guy, clearly. Doug Buchan was very good for them last year, even in the playoffs. But you're going to go with Matt Vince if you have Matt Vince. So he would be the guy. But with the Man Cup, you play – it's Friday, Saturday, and then there's a day off, and then it goes Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So you could go out for the weekend. You'd have to probably go out the Thursday. You could fly out the Friday. But then you miss the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You can go back. You guys have gone back home, and back the series and could end. Yeah, I mean, people have flown back and forth some. You can also, the series could end in four games.
Yeah.
Or five games. So then you just take off. They just change the flight and off you go. So it's not the same level of commitment as the World Championships, which does run the 19th to the 28th. You have to be there the day before. You fly out the day after, because you probably wouldn't be able to fly out the night of the gold medal game. So it's definitely a longer commitment to a World Championship where you can't be going back and forth.
Yeah, and I could definitely see him passing on that for those reasons.
So we'll see. We'll find out. I'm going to find that out after the NLL Cup ends, because, like I said, I'm not going to ask Matt Vince about it during the NLL Finals.
He's got another trophy to worry about right now.
Yeah, he's not even going to be worrying about Man Cup or World Championship or anything. So with game two coming up in Calgary, do you have, you're doing predictions for NLL.com.
I would hardly call predictions at this point.
Yeah. And I know we do them for ILIndoor.com. We do them all year. You've won that on ILIndoor a couple of times, right?
Yeah. I've won it a couple of times, not this year, but,
no, Marty O'Neill won it this year. Do you have a prediction for this weekend, or?
Yeah, I'm gonna predict Buffalo again. I predicted Buffalo last week.
Yeah.
I just think that they're gonna rebound, and like I said, it's not a slight on Calgary at all, because even though I predicted Buffalo last week, I wasn't surprised or shocked if Calgary won. And that's why I said, even when it gets to this level with teams that are this good, it's like, it's a flip of a coin, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's points in the year where there's lots of obvious picks. It's not obvious now, but I do think, you know, Buffalo going on the road, they're obviously not intimidated, you know, playing on the road. They need this one, you know, and, you know, so I could see them extending the series. And you know, what's interesting in terms of getting fans out, it's probably was the best thing. Like, if you just think from a purely business point of view for the league, it was probably the best thing that Buffalo lost, because now the Calgary fans are going to come out in droves because they know they could win a championship.
Right.
And so we could get a great crowd in Calgary this weekend. And if Calgary wins, great for those fans. If they don't win, then the fans in Buffalo are going to be all excited and say, you know, we could win, and they could get an even better crowd. I mean, they had a great crowd this past weekend, but it could be pumped up even more, knowing that they got a chance to win it that night.
Yeah, it was 15,747 in Buffalo, which is a terrific crowd. And I think I agree, Calgary. I hadn't thought of that aspect of it, but Calgary, I think fans are going to be out in droves, like you said, to see them try to clinch a championship. And if it does go to a game three, I think it'll be a great crowd again in Buffalo. They are a rabid fan base and really had fun. And I think they'll be fired up if there's a game three. I think for me, if I had to do a prediction, we're not doing them this week on IL Indoor. Guys could if they wanted to, but I don't know if anybody did for the championship. Yeah. I think it just kind of went away because everyone was like, I just don't know. But the one thing I kind of thought going into the series was, both teams are playing so well. They match up so well. They're so evenly matched. I couldn't see it likely being that either team would sweep. I thought it was going to go three games. So I guess in that case, I would pick Buffalo, because I thought Buffalo would win game one, Calgary won it. I thought Calgary would win game two. Now I think maybe Buffalo wins it. But, boy, anything could happen.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that Calgary did so well, or it just turns out that way, they took the crowd out of the game for the most part. The first half was so low scoring that you know, nothing to get too excited about if you're the crowd. But, you know, for most of that second half, it looked like, you know, Calgary was pulling away in front with it. Now, granted, Buffalo went on that three-goal run to get it close, but it never, you know, the fans never reached a peak. Mm-hmm. You know, if they had got that one more goal to put it within one, I think that last minute would have been crazy. But it never got there. And, you know, so Calgary did get the crowd out of it. I think that might be important for Buffalo. If Buffalo, like I said, they want to get to Del Bianco early. And I think they don't want to fall behind. That's for sure. Because it would be a frenzied house in Calgary if it does.
Just imagine trying to communicate on defense if you're Buffalo in Calgary and you fall behind in game two, how loud it will get. It's already, you know, defenders say it's really tough on the road when the crowd gets into it, when their offense is out there and they're trying to disrupt your communication. Boy, they'd be driven to do it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Now, one other issue coming into game two, I'm curious about this, you know, rosters, each team sits two players per game. I'm curious if you make any roster changes. One issue that to consider is Ian McKay took a 5-minute boarding major when he hit Mitch Wild after Wild scored the final goal of the game into the empty net, and McKay hit him late. He went and skidded into the boards, and I think it was a good call. I think it's an unnecessary play. Ian McKay was just frustrated. He's a good kid. I don't think he's a dirty player, but he was frustrated and just hit him late, and it was not a good decision. He got a five, and I mean, it could be turned into a game misconduct. That's a possibility.
But I heard it can't.
It can. Yeah, it can.
Okay. Yeah. It can.
It can. I can assure you that But it's. I mean, it could be upgraded, but he's not going to be suspended. I don't think it's going to affect. I think he's available. I'm 90%.
I think what I heard is the fact that there's no history
Right.
Well, so it might be different if there was a guy with history, and I don't want to quote anybody because I could be getting wrong, but he's right. not going to be suspended.
No, I'd say there's
a rookie player with a clean record with no history.
And he won't get suspended.
It was definitely a boarding, and I had it explained to me over the weekend because I said, I was so far away from the boards. And I said, that doesn't matter. One of the referees told me, if you hit somebody with sufficient force that it puts them into the boards, it doesn't matter if it's, 15 feet away.
Yeah, if they fly far enough.
Yeah.
And I mean, that precedent was established with the Greg Harnett hit on Jeremy Noble a couple of years ago when he got he got a match penalty for boarding. And when it was way away from the boards, but Noble flew through the air. So nobody will be missing. In terms of suspension, we're about 95% to 99% sure on that. I don't know that there are any injuries. Hopefully Mitch Wild is okay. So if you're both teams, let's look at Calgary first. You just won the game. You've got Mike Carnegie and Anthony Kalinich were your scratches. I can't imagine you change anything if you're Calgary.
Yeah, no. Yeah, because you mentioned Tyler Pace didn't play.
Right. Oh, that's the one. Tyler Pace may be available.
And he's available.
So he would go in.
He'll be ready to play.
Yeah.
So he would go in and
Shane Simpson would come.
Yeah, so that could be the one change. And I wouldn't even be 100% sure of that. But
I'd be pretty sure of that because I thought Shane Simpson, I'm a big fan of Shane Simpson. He's, I think, a very good D-tranny player. I thought he looked really tentative in the offensive zone. It looked like he wasn't even looking for a shot, which if you want to, I know he's out there trying to help his, Dane Doby and Curtis Dixon and Lowen and Taylor and everybody, but you really help them more if you're a threat to score. And
yeah,
he wasn't
making
himself a threat. So I think they'd like to get Pace because he's so dynamic.
Yeah. And if you look at Pace's numbers this year, 17 goals, 25 assists, so that might be something you'll see. I'm not sure about Buffalo whether they make any changes. The only guy who's kind of been in and out is Cloutier played earlier in the playoffs. I guess he played their first game against New England. But I would be leaning to say that they won't make a change if everybody's healthy. But I don't know.
John Harnett was their other scratch. And interesting because, of course, he played in Calgary for years. So, maybe you spark something by putting him in his old stomping grounds. But I don't think there was a lot of weaknesses now. And I think, Cloutier played because Thomas Hogarth was hurt in that, was unavailable for that first game. You're not taking Hogarth out. He's just too valuable to that offense with the role he plays. And Durston, the two of them just banging and making space. Neither of them scored a point, but I don't think you're taking them out. Obviously, Dane Smith, Chase Fraser, Sean Evans, I thought was outstanding in that game. His passing was just excellent. Corey Small with a couple of goals, he's just too important to their offense. And Josh Byrne, two goals, two assists, and can make things happen in spectacular fashion. So I just don't see how you make a change.
No, I don't see Buffalo making a change unless somebody's hurting.
Yeah. Now, the one other thing, actually mentioned Josh Byrne, and that is an interesting one because we talked about the replay with Ethan O'Connor's no goal leading to the Dane Doby goal. The other one that got a lot of attention that wasn't challenged was Byrne scoring late in the game, and Kurt Malofsky was yelling at the ref saying, "Hey, I need to see a replay up on the screen." And that is a rule. The arena is required to show equitable replays of both teams' goals so that the coaches get a fair chance to challenge. And obviously the referees agreed because they actually went to the scorer's box and said, "You have to show the other replays." They did not start the game. It took quite a while to get going again until they finally never really showed replays that were that helpful up on the Jumbotron. And I believe you mentioned that you guys with the broadcast, you actually had better views of it.
I thought Byrne's right replay. Foot was down. Yeah, I believe you have to show two different replays on the Jumbotron. And I think that was what the referee went to the bench or went to the timekeeper's box to pass that message that you've got to show a second replay. And from what you know, and I was trying to juggle between what was going on the Jumbotron and what was going on our monitor at the same time. And I think we had a better replay on our monitor than they were able to see on the Jumbotron. So at one point I saw, was looking at my monitor and I said, yeah, that looks, I'd be throwing the flag if I saw that. And then I immediately looked up at the Jumbotron and I don't think they were getting the same thing I did. So I said, but if they're not seeing what I'm seeing, maybe he's not taking a chance throwing the flag. So I guess, yeah, that can be a bit of an issue. Now, it's way better than it used to be, because you remember what it was a few years ago when they would not even show replays for home goals. And that drove me crazy. And, you know, I'm glad they got that straight. And that, not only that, that really hurt the broadcast of the games, because if you're watching the broadcast, you wouldn't show a replay. And then they felt like they had to make up for it once it was beyond the point of no return. So, like, once the faceoff went, the broadcasters all say, oh, let's show that goal now. And they'd show it two or three times and sometimes miss another goal. So that was, like, terrible the way it was. Not only the fact that it was unfair to the visiting team, and I guess the argument back then, well, that's the way they do it everywhere. But I'm glad they fixed that from a sense of fairness, but also just from what it did for broadcast drove me crazy when I'd be sitting at home and, you know, watching the game with my wife, and, you know, there's a nice goal. She goes, how come they're not showing it? I go, they're waiting.
Yeah. They're waiting. They're waiting for the 25 seconds.
Yeah. And then it's like, face off. Now they can show it, and they're showing it three times. So we're missing the game.
I'm actually watching the clip now as we speak. I pulled it up, watching the clip from the broadcast. And
you're a good multitasker there.
Yeah. You had a way better view on the first replay
of what you guys saw.
Than what we saw in the Jumbotron at all. And
would you agree with me that that looked close enough that you should have thrown a flag, right?
I absolutely, even what we saw in the Jumbotron, I was saying, I think it's no goal. I think his foot was down, or at least was very close. The right foot came down in the crease around when the ball was crossing the line. And it was quite a delay before they got going, and they still didn't show a good replay. That you can see. So, actually, you guys had some great views on the, broadcast. Yeah. Wow. So that's interesting.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Kurt Malowski has something to say about that. And, you know, I hope it doesn't become a tit-for-tat thing, because if that was done wrong, you know, if that was done wrong on purpose, I'd rather it get corrected everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the league deals with that kind of things behind closed doors. Obviously, they're not going to talk about it, and they shouldn't. But you know that there's going to be discussion. There is certainly discussion after. And it's a moot point because Calgary won, and the goal didn't wind up being a big factor. But
a louder discussion if Calgary didn't win,
Very much so. Very much so. We're going to wrap up there, unless there's something else you'd like to talk about. Another point that you'd like to touch on about
I'm just looking forward to a three-game series and nothing against Calgary, not that I want to take anything away from them, but I, you know, since they went to the 2 out of 3 in the NLL, which I think is, you know, was a great idea. I believe they started that in 2015, and we never got a three-game series to last year, and I'd like to see another one this year. I think it's great for the game, you know, to go three games. It's just makes it so exciting for the fans and, you know, for the viewers and everything. So I'm hoping that we call another game in Buffalo in another week.
That actually brings up an interesting point, though. The last time Calgary was in the championship series was in 2014. They were playing game 2 and 3, the mini game in Rochester. And I was there for that game covering it. And I'll tell you, I was not a fan of the mini game when the idea was proposed. I thought, I don't like it. Seems gimmicky, whatever. And then I was at a couple of them, and that may have been the most exciting 10 minutes of lacrosse I've seen.
I remember it was a shocking mini game because Calgary totally controlled that. It was 10 minutes, right?
Yes.
It looked like it was their championship. Mm-hmm. I believe they went up 2-0, and then Rochester scored 3 within about a minute.
Dan Dawson.
Joe Walters and Reseteris were on fire. Like, I think those two guys were involved in just about every goal. And it was just like, from what just looked like a terrible 10 minutes for Rochester, turned around on a dime.
Yeah.
And you know, and that was, yeah, that was quite a victory for Rochester. And yeah, I remember that was pretty exciting, especially the fact that, you know, it was in Rochester, and those Rochester fans looked like they had almost given up when when Rochester went on that quick run, you know, and it was all in the last 3 minutes, I believe.
It was, and they got into it. It was loud and exciting, and boy, it was fun to be part of. And so I guess, I mean, personally, I never root for teams, but I mean, a third game sounds pretty exciting, and I'm not going to Calgary. That's not in the cards for me. But Buffalo, I might just be able to get back down to watch that game. So yeah, I think a lot of people would probably, other than in Calgary, I'm sure a lot of people are thinking.
Oh yeah. You know what? If Calgary wins this championship, I won't be at all disappointed for them.
No.
Winning. And you know what? I better apologize. It wasn't Reziteris who was involved. It was Craig Point. I just pulled up the stats from that minigame. Craig Point scored two goals, two of those goals. Joe Walters got one goal. So it was a 3-2 minigame. Yeah. And yeah, Walters got two assists and one goal. And Craig Point had a couple goals.
Yeah.
And you're right, Dawson was involved in one of them. So I knew it was... I forget. Was Craig Point a righty or a lefty?
He was a righty.
He was a righty. That's probably,
he played for Six Nations last year. He's still
that's
playing.
That's right. That's why I was thinking Reziteris. But it was Craig Point. And that was all within the last 3 minutes and 14 seconds. They scored those three goals.
And if you've still got it up, didn't Dan Dawson have like 7 points in the game two? And then...
Let me pull up, because they've actually separated them as if they were two different games.
Well, they were technically.
Yeah. So I got to pull up the game sheet for the other one. Let me see how Dawson did in that game. Dan Dawson, 3 goals, 4 assists. Yeah. So
there you go. Yeah. Who needs to pull up the stat sheet?
16-10 for Rochester in the first game, and you know what was kind of funny about that is the fact that you can blow a team out in the regular game, it sort of means nothing. So, like, you know, I'm sure once Calgary knew they weren't going to win that game, they might as well throw in the towel for that game to rest for the mini game. You know,
yeah,
it's kind of a weird scenario. But I still, I agree with it. It was exciting, but I'd still rather have the traditional game.
100%.
I know, I'd love to have a 4 out of 7. I can't see that happening in the NLL in the near future, but. You know, there's nothing like a game 7 in any sport.
That's true. There is nothing like it. And Shani, I really appreciate you taking the time. Always fun to chat about lacrosse, and it's great to have you on the show. And thanks so much. And enjoy game 2, and we'll see what happens from there.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much. We'll talk to you there, Stamper.
All right, lacrosse friends, I'll wrap it up for this episode of Box the Beat. Following game 1 of the NLL Cup Finals, it is 1-0 for the Calgary Roughnecks. They'll be back home this weekend, this Saturday night, for game 2 against the Buffalo Bandits. Calgary looking to clinch the championship. Buffalo looking to set up a return match and a clinching game 3 for someone back in Buffalo the following Friday, May 31st. My thanks to Brian Shanahan, always an interesting guest, and to you, lacrosse friends, for being here on Box the Beat on NLL Radio.